That's right. We are right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 bypass. And we have South Carolina State Treasurer Curtis Loftus on the line with us this morning. How are you feeling, Curtis?
I am feeling very well, far better than I deserve. Thank you for asking.
Oh, absolutely. So are you, what did they decide? Are they just decide you get too excited, or what's the deal?
Well, for those who didn't know, I spent a little time in the hospital. I had what I thought was a heart attack, and that's the problem with being a minor politician. What happens is that you don't get to get really good perks, but what you get is the publicity that every time you do something, there's somebody there to tweet it.
Sure.
So while I was in the hospital, somebody was tweeting that I was in the hospital. I had what the blood pressure event. I've always had low blood pressure, and now it's turned where it's high blood pressure. And, you know, it's so funny. So many people have so many worse problems than I do. It's just I end up in the paper. So I can treat mine with medicine. I can treat it with getting back in shape and eating properly, all the things that we know we're supposed to be doing, but I haven't been doing. The last 2.5 years have been some hard working years for me, and I just let myself go. And the doctor said, the good Lord has prompted all this, and you better take care of yourself.
Sure.
So I am. I do, you know, I'll tell you what's funny, Ann. I went to the Carolina ball game Saturday night here in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And I had so many people come to me and say, Mr. Treasurer, saw you in the paper. How you feeling? And I would tell them, and then say, well, you know, I had a heart attack 6 months ago, or a year ago, I had valves replaced or whatever, you know.
Sure.
All these stories. And of course, firstly, I'm thinking, well, how did I not know that so many of my friends have had problems? Well, one, you don't read about them in the newspaper. But two, we live in a great time. We live in a time where people can have problems, and if we take care of ourselves and rely on the medical system, it's going to help us. And I'm lucky the state of South Carolina has a great health plan. I'm part of it. It paid for my bills. It paid for wonderful help here at Palmetto Health. And we just we hear a lot of bad things about the medical care.
Mm-hmm.
In other countries, I could have, you know, passed on in this world. But here, it was routine, and they fixed me up, and I live a long life because of it. So I can only be thankful, and I hope that people at Greenwood take this and all the other signals that they have to take better care of themselves. The Lord put us here for a reason. We're supposed to enjoy ourselves, so we've got to take care of ourselves to do that.
Well, you know, I was just thinking about this, Curtis. Do you think we could blame the government for this? Because, I mean, that was an undue stress, and for all the people that have been working so hard through this stressful time from 2008
That's
on,
it.
maybe we
need a lawsuit.
Yeah.
We need a good lawyer.
Yeah.
I try to stay as far away from courtrooms as I can. But, you know, there's nothing I can say new. I wish I could say something smart and witty. But it's all the cliches. You know, our bodies are our own. And we, everything we owe to the Lord, and we've got to take care of ourselves. And virtually all of us need to take better care of ourselves.
Absolutely.
So this is my wake-up call. I've always been healthy. It's my wake-up call, and everybody has their own. And, you know, we're kind of all in this together. So I hope and pray that everybody gets the same kind of care and attention that I got, and that we all get healthy together.
Well, you know, that brings up another interesting topic, and then we'll move on to another one. But it just makes you wonder, with all the things that we hear about with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, what type of situation would it be?
Gosh, I just worry about it. You know, I spent a lot of time overseas doing mission work, and in countries that talk about having free health care,
mm-hmm.
Well, it's anything but. You know, it's not free because you have to bribe for everything, and most of it's not health care. It's some low quality of care that, you know, we wouldn't do. I wouldn't let my animal or my dog go into a hospital in most of the countries in Eastern Europe.
Sure.
And these are countries that have been developed for, you know, thousands of years. They're descendants of the Roman Empire and all that stuff. So I just worry about it. Government, the 2.5 years I've been in there, it taught me one lesson, and one lesson that I can never forget. They can look you square in the eye and tell you anything they want to and never have the first bit of regret or doubt about what they say. And it is almost always incorrect. I deal with it every day. They make up phrases. They change the definition of words. It's appalling what our government does to us on a regular basis, not just the federal government, but the state government.
Oh, well.
And at some point, the people of this country are going to have to stand up, and I think partly that's happened, but this Obamacare thing, and you know, try not to be a partisan here, try not to be a Republican looking at a Democratic president. If you look at it, there's nothing good in it. There were lots of ways to accomplish some of the goals they wanted to do, but they didn't have those goals in mind. This isn't about health care. This is about power and control. This is about big business. I mean, it's a mess, and we're going to have to pay the bill.
Absolutely. And, you know, now with the IRS scandal that just keeps getting bigger and bigger, Susan Rice looks like is going to become part of his cabinet, I think, or some office with President Obama. It just seems like things are just getting more and more outside the box.
Well, this all goes back to what I just mentioned. They can say anything. They can look you in the eye, look that camera straight in the eye, and say, no, we didn't target conservatives. Well, every single fact that there is shows that they can target conservatives and conservatives only. But they can say otherwise because there's no such thing as an objective truth.
Yeah.
And, you know, what they'll do is they'll change the term of conservative. You know, conservative for the purposes of IRS means X. You know, that's what they do all the time. And they do that with, you know, I deal with investments a lot. And believe me, what they do there is they just change the terms of the words, what the words mean. And so this IRS thing, if people don't go to jail, something is wrong. I mean, and I don't mean in 5 years. I mean people ought to be being indicted, you know, as quickly as due process allows. It's unforgivable. Had it been under George Bush or Ronald Reagan, I'd say the exact same thing. It's just unforgivable, and if we were worth our salt, we would all have pitchforks and shovels, and we'd be walking toward Washington, D.C. right now to throw the whole lot out.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on some parts of this. It just is phenomenal what is happening, and it's just like, oh, it's another day in Washington.
Yeah, and, you know, part of the problem is, Ann, is that the story is so outrageous, people don't believe it. You know, if I said to people, Ann got mad at one of her employees and was really pretty hard on her, they would believe that. If I said Ann got mad at one of her employees, took her outside and beat her with a stick, well, nobody would believe that. Well, but it could be true, right? The problem with the IRS scandal is, like so many others, it is so outrageous. It goes back to the Hitler thing. It's the big lie.
Sure.
And it's easy for them to say nothing happened. It's just a disaster. And this goes back to we don't have politicians, elected officials, who will stand up and say, that's a lie, that's wrong. And that's what we got to have. I've been doing that in Colombia with this investment commission stuff, and believe me, the whole kit and caboodle's after me. But I don't care. I know right from wrong, and I know what we have to do. And if I keep my head and myself in between the ditches and don't go too far left, too far right, if I don't get too mad, the whole bit, I'll be successful. But what you got to know is there is an objective truth out there. There are things that are just wrong. They are statutorily illegal or unethical, and we have to point that out and keep pointing it out. The press is no friend to that part of the story. The special interest groups are no friend to those parts of the story because everybody's trying to make money off of government. So, but the truth will out. The Bible tells us that, and we just have to stay after it.
Sure. You know, one of the things that I can't believe I had Representative Mike Pitts on with us the other day is that down there in Colombia, we are not going to rectify the problem with people getting on the ballot. You know, we had 250 throughout the state that got kicked off because they didn't turn in their statement of condition. It seems like that would have been such a simple thing to rectify, and yet I find out that I believe it's stuck in the Senate and is not going to come to fruition in this term of the legislature.
That's unforgivable. And I'm glad Mike said that. I didn't, you know, Mike is one who will call people out. Thank goodness for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, his buddy Jeff Duncan, I didn't realize they were all hunting buddies until last year.
Yeah.
They both will stand up and do the right thing. And, you know, they catch some flack for it, but they're man of faith and they're going to stay after it. I didn't realize that. That is an unforgivable situation. I don't follow that issue because I follow mainly the financial issues.
Sure.
So many of them, I just can't keep track. But thanks for telling me that. And there's real problems. I mean, you know, I'll get in trouble for this, but this whole thing about Senator Robert Ford, I'm sure there's something wrong there and they need to fix it. I haven't really read the stories. That's not the problem in this state. Somebody spending a few dollars out of, you know, that's not what's wrong with this state. What's wrong with this state is the big picture, the big corruption items, how we do our budgets, how one or two or three people can control every came to this country in rickety boats. They climbed across borders. They swam here. They did all sorts of things to get here. And now we're going to let one or two or three people supposedly be a democracy. We're going to let just a handful of people run things. That's wrong. That's what we need to worry about. Sure, there needs to be an ethics commission. We need to worry about, you know, people spending campaign money incorrectly. But those nickels and dimes are nothing compared to the sins and the wrongs that are done against the people of the state every day. And I did not know about that voter problem. It was not being remedied. I'm about to walk in my office right now.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, that's the first question I'm going to ask. I'm going to find out what, when, and how.
Yeah, well, it's I think it's stuck in the Senate, if I remember correctly, what Mike. But I would have thought that that one would have been a slam dunk. But evidently, they wanted to add too many other things to it. And, you know, it's that posturing thing that we seem to go through here in our state. And every state, not just us, but every state,
well,
including Washington, D.C.
We're particularly bad about it. You've got to remember this. In the Senate, literally one, maybe two people decide where all the money goes. And so when you decide where the money goes, you decide everything. I mean, that's just how it works. You know, the person in a home.
That's called the golden rule, isn't it?
Yeah. That's exactly right. And so those are the big issues. We fight all the time. You hear people in South Carolina talking about gay marriage. Well, sure, I understand why people invest in gay marriage. But that's not our problem. The small little teeny bit of union activities in South Carolina, that's not our problem. We have real and structural problems. How do we move ourselves to discussing those? And the seniority system in the Senate is one of those. We've got to do something about it. And until we do something about it, we're going to continue to have these perverse outcomes.
Absolutely. And I understand that you were able to get a good outcome with the bank up there in New York that was handling the money.
We were. I am prohibited by the settlement to say certain things.
Okay.
You know, and that's the way it is with any case. But
sure.
I can say some things.
Okay. I knew you'd want to say some of those things,
yeah.
Curtis.
And we're, you know, it's the funny. This is what I'm talking about. You know, this little case, we were able to settle on terms. Not so little, but in the terms of my office managed or bank $50 billion last year. So $25 million is a small amount of money. And it's important. I had hundreds of hours of my time in it. The attorney generals, the outside legal team, we spent a lot of time. And we're catching flack now from people who know nothing about it. And again, it's just politics. It's just all it is, politics. It's the, well, you know, there is a contingency fees paid. Well, that's just, have you ever heard of a contingency fee that didn't sound high? Right?
Sure.
Because, you know, they only get paid if they win. If they lose, they don't get paid. You know, do you ever hear, oh, guess what? The case didn't win, and so therefore we got lawyers that are getting paid. Don't we need to cry about that? No, that's never the headline. The headline is about when somebody makes money. So this is just politics, and I don't really care. I'm gonna keep powering through all this. But what we did was we advanced the state. We thought the previous treasurer and the previous attorney general thought the state had been wrong. They were courageous to have started an action. We continued the action, the present attorney general and myself. We continue that action, and we were able to bring back a settlement, more than $25 million in cash, and we get service credits, but that could be $80 or $100 million, which means that's discounts on real services that we'll be using. So it's a great settlement. I got people after me, but that's just politics. You know, it's just, it got, you know, I printed out a little sign today that said, if people are after you, just laugh about it. You know, and that's what I got. I just got to laugh about it. But we're proud of that. And those who know the facts or think we did real well, it's always a crapshoot when you go in litigation. And you get in there, you don't know if you win or lose, but we did real well.
Absolutely. Well, I am glad that you had a good outcome on that. You know, I've been trying to follow the Budget and Control Board versus the Department of Administration. Looks like the Department of Administration is not going to happen this session.
That's what I keep hearing. You know, this is one of these issues. There's a common sense way to make this happen, and that is you're not going to get 100% what you want. So we need to back off, give the governor 80% of what ought to be in administration. 80%. Now think about this. We all got elected in 2010. We were inaugurated in 2011. we could have gotten 80% of the Department of Administration in 2011. That meant we had 2012 and 2013, the year we're in now, to fine-tune it. Maybe give it some more, maybe give it a little less. It gives the governor the opportunity to take in what she could handle and begin to manage it, hopefully in a better way, because I have a lot of confidence in her. But what have we done? We've held out for 100%. And so the people who argue, the special interests who like to talk about we need an office of administration, they get paid another year to fight for it. And those who want to fight against it get paid another year to fight against it. It's great talking points for both sides, and nothing ever happens.
Well, I think
the taxpayers are the ones being harmed. So we could take that 70 or 80%, everything you can touch and feel, you know, the trucks and the vehicles and the computers and buildings and things like that, employees, take them, send them to the office administration. That bill would probably pass in a week, literally a week. But they refuse to do it. It's a great talking point. Everybody likes to talk about it. It's one of those things that the more they talk about it, the more you can rest assured they don't really want to do anything about it.
You know, I find that very interesting, Curtis, that you brought that up. Mike Pitts was talking about that, you know, a bill is a law is supposed to be written so that the common man can understand it.
Yes.
And he was talking about how he writes bills that way, and then they always are sent to the lawyers to have it legalized so that nobody can understand.
Well, and I, you know, we go back a lot of times, lots of times, the old statutes, you know, the old laws.
Right.
And they're still in the force. And you read them, and there's a lot of ambiguity there. I mean, we do a good job of giving lawyers a lot to argue about later on. So yeah. Much of this all comes down, it's just transparency and accountability. If Ann Eller has to do a job, and she has to sign off on it, then that job's going to be done better than if Ann Eller doesn't have to sign off. That's just human nature.
Sure.
And the one thing you have a hard time in South Carolina getting done is to find one person in charge of something, and then that person signs off. That's why we have so many boards and commissions and cost-conflicting laws and all that, because nobody wants to sign anything. And I have a fetish about that. When something important comes through my office, I don't let somebody sign it on my name. I sign it myself. I want them to know that I have inspected this, and if something goes wrong, you come to me. Because that's the only way I get it fixed. If something goes wrong and I start pointing the fingers at three different agencies, well, then nothing gets fixed, does it? That's why we have the same problems over and over and over. The simple, basic, good business of having somebody sign for their work and being transparent about it, that's what we have to do. Think about it. If you're an artist, you sign your work. You're proud of it. Well, why wouldn't you sign a legal document or a financial document or whatever it is? Why wouldn't you sign it when you're done with it? Because you're not proud of it.
Well, I think
that's part of this whole IRS and everything else. You get to the bottom of it, and nobody's ever responsible for anything. And so the office administration here at the Treasurer's Office is working diligently. I want somebody signing, somebody of importance, to sign everything that matters. And that way, it'll be done well.
Well, I think, you know, I think you and I both grew up being responsible. And I think what we have developed is a culture of, well, it's not my fault. There's always a reason why it's not my fault. You know,
well,
in the military, Jeff says it's yes, sir, no excuse, sir. That's he went to West Point. That was their mantra there. We need to get back to that, don't we, Curtis?
I agree. And, you know, in somebody's personal life, I don't care what they do. I'm a libertarian about that kind of stuff. You can do what you want to do. But when you come to service, especially elected officers or high bureaucrats, and you're making big decisions. I mean, people don't realize, when you elect a treasurer, when you elect a governor, you've effectively taken a normal person and made them a billionaire. I have the oomph of a billionaire in the world in which I live. I control billions of dollars. Think about that.
How's that feel, Curtis?
Why in the world would I not be responsible? And yet we do that. We give people immense power and no responsibility or no accountability. If something goes wrong, it's always somebody else's fault. And I, you know, doctor told me, Curtis, you can't continue to work 70, 75 hours a week. And he's right. I couldn't. I always knew that I couldn't, but I was going to work it as long as I could because I inherited a long history of things not being done the way they should be done. I've got good people in the treasurer's office. It's not their fault. It's always the leadership's fault. The average state employee is a great person. It's the leader's problem. And so as we move toward making everything accountable, as we move toward tracking dollars and as they're spent around state government and making clear paths about where it goes and how it's spent, people are real mad. And that tells me I'm on them. And the closer I get to the heart of corruption, which is all this overlapping authority, this money that just vanishes, money that goes off in crazy ways, the more they're going to be after me. And I get that. So that's okay. But we've got to be responsible. And, you know, the governor, the treasurer, the lieutenant governor, the head of parks, recreation, tourism, whoever you are, if you're in charge, you've got to be in charge and you've got to be responsible. And you have to figure out ways to make that happen. People like the IRS, nobody's responsible. And that's why nobody's going to get in trouble. Oh, a few people will get disciplined, that'll be it. So, well, nobody had to sign for anything. Make them responsible, make them own it, and then we'll have the government we deserve.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more, and the IRS is a perfect example of not me. We used to have an employee here, Curtis. This person's name was Nami.
Well, I get out around South Carolina, and I meet wonderful people. I meet, you know, I was in Allendale the other day. I met some people just as poor as you could be, and they couldn't be better people. The people of this state are better than the government. It should be the other way around. The people of this state are much better than the people they have representing them and the people who get in these high offices and make a lot of money. We've got to change that. We have to reflect the people out there. And the people are hard working. I mean, sure, we have pockets of high unemployment because there are no jobs and stuff, and that's real life problems. I can't deal with that, you know, in the short term. But as the whole state progresses down, you know, the path of time, we have to realize that state government is not nearly as good as the people it serves, and we have to figure out a way to do that. And I think the only way to do that is by making it accountable. And so we have to be transparent as we can. We have to sign for the documents, make sure that you're responsible. And that's the big key. And when we do that, we'll have good government. You never find anybody doing something that's outrageous and signing their name to it. Never. It just doesn't happen. But you find that a lot of people do outrageous things and they point fingers at their neighbor. And so it's human nature. It's not just in government. The government has raised it to an art.
Absolutely, they have. Well, Curtis, I know you wanted to mention your 529 plan, the 529 day. Have you had any babies that were born on May 29th?
No, I'm gonna get a briefing here this afternoon, but on May the 29th, 529, which is the name of the IRS code, that's why we use it, it's 529, is on that day, every baby born in South Carolina got $529 put in its own free $529 college savings plan. And all the money came from private sources, no government funds. Don't worry about that. I'm accountable. No government funds. So they were supposed to be, statistically speaking, between 35 and 75 babies born on that day.
Okay.
I don't know exactly how many were born. We're going to find out. But what's the important thing that Ann Eller needs to know here? What's the important thing, Ann?
Okay.
What is 9 months before May 29th? See, that's your planning date. If you hope to get $529 next year, you have to have a baby on May 29th, right? So you got to do the math. That's it. Do the math. And so you got to increase your chances. Yeah. You know, so it could be worth $529 for you to be nice to your wife that night. So, and that begins your child's savings college program hopefully the rest of us, you know, until it turns 18, goes off to college.
Sure.
College debt is just tremendous. We got to find a way to get rid of it. And this college savings program is a great way to put money in the account, let it grow tax-free, take it out tax-free for college expenses. It's one of the best things that the government has anything to do with. And so this 529, you know, giving $529 for all the kids born on May the 29th, that was just a little marketing gimmick the bank came up with. And, you know, I'm working for free. I love to go out and hawk the product for them because every kid who gets $529 put into an account, and then their grandparents and their parents and everybody starts chunking a little bit of money in there as they go along, those are kids who can get out of college without debt. And that's a good thing for South Carolina.
Absolutely. Well, Curtis, I think that's terrific. And for all of those that need to do the math, I mean, you need to be thinking about this. Just for the record, if you have cesarean section, does that count for 529?
if it was born on that day, we say yes. If you can convince your doctor into that. But remember now, this is an opportunity for business. You're in the jewelry business.
Right.
So you should start a sale the week before August the 29th saying, hey, if you want to share that $529, you better be nice to your wife. Come in here and buy a ring.
Come in here and buy a $10,000 ring to save $529. There you go, Curtis. I like the marketing plan.
Hey, when it comes to love, dumber things have been done.
Absolutely.
Be good, Ann.
All right, you too, Curtis. I got to ask you one question.
Yes.
You're still running, right?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay.
Until I got a couple big projects. Until I get rid of those done, I am tied to my desk, but I can't stop. I'm in the middle of them, and I just can't stop.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure this blood pressure thing wasn't going to make you change your mind about running again.
It's cut my hours back. As my dad says, you can go from 75 hours, you can go to 40 hours, and you'll still be just fine, and you'll get just as much done, but you won't have the blood pressure. I said, all right, Daddy, I'll listen to you. He's 83. He knows what he's talking about.
All right. Thanks so much for calling in this morning, Curtis. Bye-bye.